Remember how we'd once hunt lobster?
Do I? If me, I wish we were home doing that now. What's happening?
Are you having equipment trouble on the bridge?
I'm getting no visual, and there's a lot of static.
I thought you were taken off comm duty.
And why the trinary?
Necessity is someone's crackle mother. I send this via close nerve socket. Anxious, I seek soft high patron, urgently, to pass crackle warning. Toshio's lips pursed as he repeated the message to himself silently. Soft high patron. There were few humans given titles like that by Thins. Only one candidate was here on the island right now.
You want to talk to Jillian?
Urgently, to pass on warning. Toshio blinked. Then he said,
I'll get her right away, Aki. You hold on.
He turned and ran into the forest, calling Jillian's name at the top of his lungs. Chapter 43 Aki. The monofilament cable was almost invisible against the rubble and ooze of the sea floor. Even in the light from Aki's harness lamp, it barely reflected a spiderweb's glimmer here and there amid the rock and sediments atop this jagged ridgeline. The cable had been designed to be hard to detect. It was the only certain way Streaker could communicate with her two outlying work parties without giving away her location. Aki had been forced to search for over an hour, using the best instruments at his disposal, and knowing where to look before finding the line to the island. By the time he had clipped his neural tap into the line, more than half of the oxygen in his breather was gone. A lot of time had been spent just getting away from the ship, and Aki wasn't even sure his departure had gone unnoticed. The taciturn electrician's mate in charge of the equipment locker shouldn't have questioned orders when Aki asked for breathing gear. Another Finn, an off-duty engine room rating, had followed him from a distance, and Aki had to dodge through the outlock to shake the Stenos off his tail. In less than 2 days, a subtle change had come over the crew of Streaker. A new alignment of power. Crew members who had formerly been of little influence now pushed their way to the front of the food lines and adopted dominant body postures, while others went about their duties with eyes downcast and flukes drooping. Rank and official position had little to do with it. Such things had always been informal aboard Streaker anyway. Dolphins were more apt to pay attention to subtle shifts in dominance than to formal authority. Now, even racism seemed to be a factor. A disproportionate number of the new figures of authority were of the Stenos subbreed. It amounted to an informal coup. Officially, Takata Jim was acting on behalf of the unconscious Crydike until a ship's council could be convened. But Streaker's water had the taste of a herd with a new dominant male. Those close to the old bull were on the out, and cronies of the new swam in the vanguard. Aki found it all quite illogical and disgusting. It bothered him that even the highly selected Fen of Streaker's crew could submit to ancient patterns of behavior under stress. He now saw what the Galactics meant when they said 300 years of uplift was too short for a race to fly starships. The rude realization made Aki feel more like a client than he ever had in the mixed egalitarian colony of Calathea. It gave a primitive satisfaction to his act of mutiny, abandoning the ship to make contact with Jillian Baskin against specific orders from the acting captain. Now Aki felt he knew the truth. He was a member of a crew of imitation spacemen. There was no way, short of Crydike miraculously recovering, that they were going to get out of this mess without intervention by their patrons. He discounted the value of Ignacio Metz, or Emerson Dianiti, or even Toshio, for that matter. He agreed with McKinney that their only hope lay in Dr. Baskin or Mr. Orley coming home. By now he had come to accept that Orley was lost. The rest of the crew believed this, and it was one more reason morale had gone to hell since Krydike's accident. The comm line quietly sent a carrier tone directly to his statoacoustic nerve as Aki waited impatiently for Toshio to return with Jillian. The line was not being used for anything else now that Charles Dart had signed off, but every second increased the chance that the comm operator aboard the ship would detect his tap. Aki had set it up to hide his conversation with Toshio, but even a dullard comsec Finn couldn't miss the side effects in time. "Where are they?" he wondered. "Surely they know I only have so much air, and this metal-rich water makes my skin itch." Aki breathed slowly for calm. A teaching rhyme of Kanik ran through his mind. "Past is what once was, a remnant that's called memory. In it lie the causes of what now is. Future is what will be, envisioned, seldom seen. In it lie results of what now is. Present is that narrowness, passing, always flickering, proof of the joke of what now is." Past, future, and present were among the hardest ideas to express explicitly in trinary. The rhyme was meant to teach causation as the human patrons and most other sophants saw it, while keeping essential faith with the cetacean view of life. It all seemed so simple to Aki. At times, he wondered why some of these dolphins of Earth had so much trouble with such ideas. One thought, one imagined actions, and their consequences, considered how the different results would taste and feel, then one acted. If the future was unclear, one did the best one could, and hoped. It was how humans had muddled through during the ages of their horrible orphaned ignorance. Aki saw no reason why it should be so hard for his people, especially when they were being shown the way.
"Aki? Toshio here. Jillian's coming. She had to break away from something important, so I ran ahead. Are you all right?"
Aki sighed. "In the depths, with itching blowmouth, I tread in wait at duty's calling as the cycloid rolls in."
"Hang on,"
Toshio called, interrupting the rhyme. Aki grimaced. Toshio never would develop a sense of style.
"Here's Jillian," Toshio finished. "Take care of yourself, Aki."
The line crackled with static.
"You too, diving flying partner." "Aki?"
It was the voice of Jillian Baskin, made tinny by the weak connection, but almost infinitely gratifying to hear.
"What is it, dear? Can you tell me what's going on the ship? Why won't Krydike talk to me?"
That wasn't what Aki had thought she would ask first. For some reason, he had expected her main concern to be Tom Orley. Well, he wasn't about to bring the subject up if she didn't.
"McKinney, patient healer, sends me out with danger warning. Soundless, flukeless, lies Krydike. Streaker's fortunes strangely whining. And the taste of atavism fouls the waters."
There was silence at the other end. No doubt Jillian was formulating her next question in a way that would let him answer unambiguously in trinary. It was a skill Toshio sometimes sadly lacked. Aki brought his head up quickly. Was that a sound? It hadn't come from the comm line, but from the dark waters around him.
"Aki,"
Jillian began,
"I'm going to ask you questions phrased to take three-level answers. Please spare artistry for brevity in answering."
"Gladly, if I can," Aki thought. He had often wondered why it was so hard to hold direct conversations in trinary without beating around the bush in poetic allusion. It was his native tongue as much as Anglic was, and still he felt frustrated by its resistance to shortcuts.